Roger Baker is former Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're reading about, Roger, in GCN, the end of the line, theoretically, for Windows XP, but there are a number of facts here that struck me. The Labor Department Chief Information Officer said earlier this year they've got 10,000 XP users at that agency. Microsoft signing a deal with the Navy to do support for 100,000 mission-critical systems, including thousands of XP computers. So XP is still on the radar screen of a lot of your colleagues who are still in government. What do you think of that when you look at that? Do you think this is institutional barriers that are causing people to stick with XP, cultural shifts, fear of training, money? What are some of the factors that are going into this? Thanks for your time today, Roger.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Well, you notice that you don't see us talking about private sector companies that haven't moved off Windows XP. They're, by and large, this is, to me, a discipline issue. We've known for years that XP was going to end of life. Microsoft is very upfront about what their schedules are for those sort of things. And I can just tell you from experience at VA, it is extremely difficult to get the users moving to change from XP to Windows 7. I'm sure it was probably just as difficult going from Windows 95 to Windows XP back in the day. It really is a... There are two things that occur. The first is, it seems like in government, we allow people to build applications that are completely dependent on features only in a particular operating system. And the second thing is that we don't plan for the cost of moving to the new operating system in the time frame that we know it's going to happen. And so both of those then build a tremendous, if you will, bow wave of resistance to moving off of the old operating system, but the security issues are tremendous. I mean, it just opens up huge holes.
I remember broadly, not just even government, but all across the computer systems everywhere, the transition for people who chose to make it from XP to Windows Vista was problematic. 7 was not so much. 8 was problematic again, and I'm not suggesting that 10 will be problematic or won't be. I don't have any idea, but I wonder if that might be some of the element of what the discipline issue is that you talked about early on, and maybe some of that resistance, I won't say is fairly placed, but I guess understandable a little bit. The hesitation is understandable a little bit.
Well, so the hesitation is understandable in any case. I mean, I can give you specific examples. We had to move 350,000 desktops at VA from XP to Windows 7. And many of those desktops were running pieces of software that the doctors relied on to do their job. And some of them would have required, going out and buying a new version of the piece of software. I mean, when you're an audiologist and the tool that you use for your patients and the one that you really like and the one that's proven to have great efficacy is Windows XP based, and either the vendor doesn't offer a Windows 7 product, or they're no longer in existence, or a variety of reasons, there's a problem. Now you multiply that by, a fair number of those 350,000 desktops, and you start to see what an agency faces. So let's go back to the discipline side of this stuff. Most agencies' technical reference manuals, or TRMs, don't place great limitations on the products that users can buy to run on these products. And so they go out and they get what they believe to be useful for their job. And 4 years later, it's IT's problem that the new operating system won't run that old product. It's not the user's problem. And again, it just builds a bow wave. When you've got a whole raft of your doctors at VA saying, I can't move from XP to Windows 7 and still do effective care for veterans, you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Roger Baker's former CIO at the Department of Veterans Affairs. One complaint I imagine that is heard in agencies is, well, it costs a lot of money, for example, to transition from Windows 7 or Windows 8 to Windows 10 when it comes out very soon. I imagine it also costs a lot of money to go and backfill. For example, we mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, the 2-year contract for just over $9 million from the Navy. Part of that goes toward maintaining support for thousands of XP computers, 10,000 XP users still at the Department of Labor, and somebody's got to do that maintenance and care if Microsoft's not going to provide that support anymore. So I imagine there's a chunk of change that goes to that, too, that could probably be better put toward transitioning to a newer system.
Yeah, and the way the Microsoft Enterprise license works, you've already bought the license for the new operating system by the time the new operating system comes out. So you have the right to deploy it on every one of your systems at the point that it comes out. So it turns out that from an IT standpoint, it's much more expensive to support the old operating system than to move to the new operating system. But again, you know, just using VA as an example, we had to have an entire program team that went through and found all of the barriers to moving from XP to Windows 7. Every desktop that had an application that couldn't be either transitioned to Windows 7 or eliminated, and then had to come up with a plan for how are we going to transition that application. And in some cases, that meant leaving it on Windows XP, but putting the XP systems behind a VLAN that kept those XP systems off of the main network. And in the end, the thing that I thought was fairly funny is, it took the new folks that came in really putting their foot down and just saying, we are going to finish this transition from XP to 7. It's one of those things where if as a CIO, you take your eye off the ball for even a second, the resistance is so large that if you don't have the CIO pushing it, the program team probably doesn't have enough wherewithal to force everybody to move. And so you've got to have that high level push to make that happen.
What would you do if you were putting together an 8 or a 7 or 8 to Windows 10 transition today, Roger?
I think you start early. You start moving, you have to recognize you're going to live in an environment where both operating systems are there for a period of time, but you start moving users that you can move very, very early, and then you start creating your own end-of-life scenarios for applications and push some of it back to the user. If you tell a user, look, in 18 months, you either have to have found a replacement for this application or have bought a new version of the application or convinced the vendor, you know, to fix the problem for you. But in 18 months, it's no longer IT's problem. You will be on the next version of the operating system. You know, a lot can be learned from the way that Microsoft goes at this. If you've established the deadlines far in advance and then you just hold to the deadlines, you'll still hear complaining. But nobody's going to listen to the complainers because they're going to look at what you did and they're going to say, yeah, this isn't your fault. You laid this out. You told them what needed to be done. It's a reasonable approach. They just need to get in with the program. It's when you try and spring it on them in what they view as the last minute. We got to have this done in 6 months because Microsoft just ended their support, that they ask reasonable questions like, well, how long have you known Microsoft is going to end support here? And when the answer is 5 years. You don't get a lot of you don't win a lot of friends that way.
I'm going to pretend that I know a little bit what I'm talking about when it comes to the nuts and bolts of this stuff, Roger. Is it possible that the Windows 7 or Windows 8 to 10 transition might be easier since it's a 64-bit to 64-bit transition rather than what a lot of people tried moving 32-bit XP to 64-bit 7?
So I'm going to, just like you, pretend that technically I know what I'm talking about here. The main thing is the compatibility of the applications. You know, from XP to 7, we had to find compatibility packages that would allow XP applications to actually run on Windows 7 and then go through and check out every one of those applications for did it run. If many more applications will just run on Windows 10 that ran on Windows 7, then it will make it a lot easier. But again, the barrier typically is partly that, but it's also partly just user resistance. You know, we finally had to get to the point with users where we told them, when you come in on Monday, you will have a new operating system on your desktop. We're not asking please, we're simply informing you that as of Monday morning at 8 a.m., you'll have a new operating system on your desktop. And, you know, it kind of goes back to to the old line from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, resistance is futile, and you have to get to that point.
Are there any opportunities to do other kinds of upgrades or enhancements to the Enterprise while you're doing a transition like this, or should you only try to do one major thing like this at a time?
No, in the end, you bundle a bunch of things with it. We wrestled with encrypting the hard disks on the desktops while I was there for the first 3 years. And what we finally settled on was that when we moved the users to Windows 7, we would encrypt the hard disks at that point. And so, you try to line up two or three wins. Now, you got to test that, and you got to make certain that all those things are going to work together. But the fact is, it takes a lot of IT hours to make that move. And a lot of them are just in prepping the user and getting everything set to put the new image on the system. So being able to bundle several things with it just makes logical sense. Now, it adds more risk, but in the end, you make that calculation that the risk is worth the investment to do it.